Brought to you by Shut Up and Listen, this is the proper full-on gay podcast. Coming up, it's standing room only as I welcome special guests, Anya, Lee and Liam from three of our national partners. We get under the skin of youth work and talk about how their youth workers support queer young people across the UK and Ireland. You can follow us on social media at Proper Full On Gay Podcast and learn more about the show and our partners at properfullongaypodcast.com. Welcome to the podcast, folks. It's so exciting to have you all with us. I've been looking forward to this episode for such a long time. We have three really special guests from our national partners, so it's a really full episode. I can't wait. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourselves?
Hey, I'm really excited to be here. I'm Liam. I use he, him pronouns. I'm the youth work manager at the Proud Trust.
Hi, I'm Anya. I use she, her pronouns, and I am the youth work manager at LGBT Youth Scotland.
Hi, my name's Lee. I use they, them pronouns, and I'm the head of youth services in Carafriend.
For anybody who's just tuning in maybe for the first time, why don't you tell us about your organisations and about some of the things that you do?
So LGBT Scotland, we're a youth work organisation based in Scotland. So we support LGBTI young people aged 13 to 25. And the charity's mission is to support LGBTI young people in Scotland to flourish and thrive. And the way that we do this is through delivering a national youth work service. So youth work's a central thread of what we do. Through our youth participation work, we're also a valued partner in equality and human rights in Scotland in terms of influencing policy and affecting change on a kind of national scale.
Liam, why don't you tell us about the Proud Trust?
I will tell you about the Proud Trust. So very similarly, we're a youth organisation that supports LGBT plus young people and the adults that support them. So we work with young people aged 13 up to 25 in a variety of ways through youth groups, online digital support. We have mentors available to young people. And then for the adults, we have training for professionals, as well as that sort of digital chat service where they can come and chat and ask the questions they need to better support the young people that they're trying to support.
Last but not least, Lee.
Carafriend is a youth and community development organisation. It sort of has an additional remit on top of our youth work into the community development work that we do for the LGBTQI plus community. Our youth side of things is supporting and developing the provision of LGBTQI plus youth groups across Northern Ireland. And sort of to drill right to the core of that mission, it's to set up safe spaces for queer young people, but also to develop the spaces that they already occupy to become safer. So very, very similar to yourself, Anya and Liam, you know, policy work, going into a bit of training. It's really what they need us for, you know, not that everyone needs policy or training work, but that, you know, whatever they need, we'll do our best to support that happening, you know, to make that space more inclusive for them.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. All of your organizations are so great. They've got such wide scopes. You know, you guys do so much. You're listening to the Proper Full On Gay Podcast, that show where we use Heartstopper to inspire conversations about the lives of queer young people today. We would be really grateful if you could take just a moment to look down at your phone, hit that subscribe button. It makes a huge difference to getting the show out there and helping people to find us. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can send us an email to properfullongaypodcast@gmail.com. And if you feel like learning a bit more about our partners or about the show, you can check out our website, which is properfullongaypodcast.com. In tonight's episode, we're going to be talking about the impact that Heartstopper's had across the community, and we're also going to be talking about the impact that our partner organisations have amongst the queer young people that they work with. We talk all the time in the podcast about youth work and about youth workers, but to be honest, I'm never really sure what is actually involved in that, so I really kind of want to get under the skin of what youth work is and the impact that it has, and we hope you come along for the ride. It's going to be a great show. Why do you think Heartstopper has been so impactful amongst the young people that you work with?
I think the reason it was so impactful was because it was probably the first time they're seeing really relatable characters to themselves. Like, it resonated with so many of our young people because they're seeing a young actor that's around the age of the person they're playing a character in a school that they understand. They can see that going on a journey that they're going on right now. So very much growing with these characters is something that they can do and really relate to. So that tends to be a lot of the stuff we hear. And then just the sheer representation, like there's someone in the show for everyone, or there's pieces of people that you can relate to, whether or not it's good, bad or ugly. There's probably someone in Heartstopper that you can be like, I'm a bit of that. So that's what I get from young people.
Definitely, definitely.
Absolutely bang on, I think, Liam. Yeah, nothing really to add to that, other than it was also just, I think my takeaway from it, I watched it a little while ago, was just that it was so sort of relentlessly lovely for the most part at a time yeah. at a time when we all desperately, desperately just needed some of that. So yeah.
Absolute pure joy. Pure joy.
Oh,
queer
definitely.
Joy. Exactly. Unapologetic. It was just mint. It was so good.
Definitely.
I think total agreement with what you two are saying there. It's amazing. I love that it didn't put it into itself into a bubble that ignored homophobia, biphobia, and transphobia. But the emphasis on it wasn't really relying on shared cultural memories in the queer community. You know, it was really that feeling of being LGBTQI plus at that age. And you know, for teenagers that are just developing that understanding of their romantic feelings and what they mean, there's a sense of, I don't know about you two, but I get this sense of belonging with other LGBTQI plus people. And I definitely did when I was that age. And in my opinion, that sort of intensifies our emotions in such a different way to a lot of communities. And I've never seen that in anything but Heartstopper, just the intensity of everything together. And sort of, you know, it really fits their reality right now by very accurately portraying that desire to connect and love and be loved in return. And yeah, it was very, very powerful. Yeah.
I'm so glad you said that, because one of the key differences in Heartstopper with other more recent queer media, things like Schitt's Creek, and, you know, we've had some really great queer media in the past couple of years, but you're right, Schitt's Creek totally took place in this little bubble where homophobia didn't exist. And Heartstopper is interesting because it just cut through generations. Like, it isn't just queer young people that were hooked by Heartstopper. It's impacted almost everybody in our community, and everybody can find something that they absolutely love about the show. And you're right, it's that portrayal of community and that sense of wanting to connect with the community and being connected to the community. They've really managed to capture what that feels like, I think, whereas other queer media maybe hasn't done that to quite the same extent.
Totally. And I think this is why we need to give a shout out for the little animated kind of cartoons and little stars and things that would pop up. Because I think, as Lee was saying about the intensity of the emotion, you know, that you feel anyway when you're in love, but especially when you feel you can't express that. And so it was such a genius way to kind of portray that on the screen, just like that kind of electricity and, you know, sort of.
Yeah, it was exactly that scene. That scene, the electricity with Nick's hand when he was like, I want to touch Charlie.
Oh,
like,
oh, like, hand.
Yes. I was like, yeah. Everyone has been there. Everyone can connect to that moment of being like, I really want to do this. Do I want to do this? Can I do this? Do I? No, maybe. Yes. Yes, I want to. Is it okay? How will they react? What does this mean for me? Followed by like Googling, like, am I gay lol quiz on BuzzFeed? Like, come on. Like, that is such a teenage experience. It's untrue.
Yeah.
But it's such a queer experience whenever, I think it was episode 2, when Nick was daydreaming and I'm definitely straight. And that gut drop of like, oh God, there's the nuclear reactor falling from the throat to the stomach. Like, I have been there. And oh my God, I was having a gay crisis watching it. I was like, oh.
One of the reasons I love Heartstopper so much as a youth worker and a person that manages youth work and works with young people is the ability to use those different episodes to talk about the different themes, very similar to this podcast has done, where it's broken down by different things. Like, we talked about coming out and Nick at the very end of the series. And being able to utilize that in loads of different ways and spark conversations from it with young people. We've done it for the LGBT History Month pack that's coming up in February. We've got a pack that fits with the theme that we're talking about, which is Through the Lens. And it talks about queer media and how you can use it and how it sparks them conversations. And that's like just a free downloadable resource for anyone to use with young people. So that's how we use it. And it's a great way to do it and be like, actually, what does this mean to you as a young person? And you can watch that episode with them. Like, you're not going, oh, is there anything that I need to risk assess and go, oh, there's loads going on in this. Do I need to be worried about anything? Actually, because it's so lovely, you can just watch it with a group of young people and chat about it and see what they say, which is a really beautiful tool. Does anyone use Heartstopper in a way like that with some of the young people that you've done?
I've never considered it, but now I'm going to do it for 10 weeks.
That's the next program sorted.
Starting now.
Starting now. Absolutely. 100%. So like this other series, like It's a Sin, for some of them older young people, that had a very similar powerful message when we're talking about a different part of queer culture and history and the meaning and impact it had. And that was a really prominent one for it. So we touched on conversations around that for like World AIDS Day and those moments. And I think part of the role as youth workers for us, and you folk may agree or disagree probably, or just be like, yeah, whatever, is to help young people understand where they've come from and where they're going to go and what stamp they can put on the future. And I think that's the role of youth workers generally, more so for queer youth workers to share with queer young people, is actually you've got a really rich past. And yes, there's horrible moments in it, but we're getting better, and this is how you can do that, and this is where you can find strength to carry on and be that next person, to be that next person that inspired someone. My youth workers did it for me, hence the reason I'm a youth worker now. And I think they're the conversations that this show allows us to have, is what does it mean? This doesn't ignore it. It's not a nice moment. That's a good one. How do we support young people? In sort of that sort of role, is a youth worker's role, is to go, what do we do?
Definitely. And like negotiating sort of, or yeah, just discussing media representation, right, with young people. And I think precisely, you know, Heartstopper is kind of the perfect starting point in a sense, precisely because it is sort of so relatable and lovely, you know, quite often when films or things like that or TV series are being discussed by young people in groups, they're usually pulling them to pieces. Do you know what I mean? Kind of saying, well, that was out of order, that's homophobic, that's transphobic, I can't believe this is still being, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah
100%.
There must be more to youth work than just watching Heartstopper and these lovely TV shows, though. I've always been so curious, because we talk about youth work a lot, but I've always been a bit unclear about what it is, you know. So like, what is youth work? What does it involve?
Well, thank you for asking.
Do you know,
I've got, is it all right? I'll kind of, because honestly, it does. It comes up all the time. I feel like I'm having to answer this constantly for folk. So if I give you my little soundbite, perhaps Liam and Lee can let me know if I'm on the right track. Yeah, youth work's a unique approach to engaging young people, unlike other kind of methods that maybe are, you know, rooted in kind of more formal education or something like that. And what defines it is essentially three key approaches. So the first one is that youth work participation necessarily is voluntary. So the young person chooses to show up or not, chooses to engage or not, and they're entirely in control of that. No one's going to make them turn up. The second one is, and this is an expression that I think is used a lot in youth work, is that you start from where the young people are, or you start from where the young person is. So that talks about entirely non-judgmental approach and meeting the young person where they are and going with them where they want to go. So not kind of setting for them a target or a goal that is anything other than what they've identified for themselves, which is not an easy thing to do generally, because particularly as adults or educators, we're kind of, you know, it's a skill to keep that in check, basically. And then lastly, the defining feature is, and I guess this speaks to this thing of like youth work being a skill, is that it's about the youth worker and the young person being partners in a learning process. And so really being critical of essentially that, you know, the power dynamic that's inherent in that relationship, and recognizing that the young people have so much to teach you as a practitioner, and kind of, yeah, reflecting on that relationship as a core part of your practice. So that's generally how I try. It's never, that's actually quite concise.
I was going to say, well done, well done. Like,
Pretty good.
you've managed to answer a question that youth workers have been trying to define since the creation of youth work. Like, if you ask a youth worker, you'll get a billion different answers to what youth work is. And that summary was beautiful. For me, it's about a trusted, honest relationship that is empowering for a young person, and it's them on their journey. We're just with them on that journey for a long time, a short time. And that's exactly decided by the young people about their engagement. If they want to be there, they want us to be there. And sometimes it's like, you're not the right youth worker for me, see you later. And that's okay too. So absolutely beautiful summary of what youth work is. Put it in a book somewhere.
You know, I completely agreed with each of your core tenets there, and you know, it is so true. Ask a youth worker what youth work is, you'll get however many youth workers are, that's however many answers that you're going to get. I think there's this, it's so misunderstood in a lot of ways, because there's some component there of intervention. And don't get me wrong, there's definitely a component, that a strong component there of reducing likelihood of like poor health outcomes, or building protective factors to avoid developing poor mental health. But that's not our purpose. And our purpose is to be with them along that journey. But you know, you can see that confusion between social worker, teacher, doctor, counselor, best
For
mate, you
sure.
know, all of these things really come together in that confusion. But we're none of those things. We're just youth workers. I love this particular metaphor. So if you can go on a wee journey with me yourselves,
Love to. Thanks for
I
inviting
like
us.
hi guys, welcome to the Your Way. So I would describe youth work as a massive landscape with a rock solid mountain, if you can. And I don't want to get into copyright for this, so please cut this, Jamie, if I can't go in. But like, you know, Paramount movies, whenever they come on, you know that big mountain, Mount Fuji.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, imagine that, right? As high as you can, surrounded by a swamp, right? Now the mountain is the aims, objectives, solid outcomes, grant applications, evaluations, all that stuff. Essentially, the mountain is made up of those big words and fancy phrases, and the observable face of youth work. But the swamp, on the other hand, is where all that messy stuff happens. You know, it's made up of the small but really significant moments that, on the face of it, they're not important. But those are the small ones that those young people take away from them and keep with them forever. And an example of that, you know, when a young person is parasailing off the edge of a cliff and finds within themselves the strength to continue, it's a powerful understanding of their own resilience in the face of adversity. But if the mountain is what we can see and the swamp is everything else, no one notices the swamp and the horizon. But that swamp makes up about 98% of all of our work with young people, even if you're only funded for the 2%. So for young people, their journey in life may run through part of the swamp and up the mountain, or partially through any of them in any way. For youth workers, we're almost like the tour guide in that journey. We develop a relationship with them, and through that relationship, we can educate, support, or advise, and be really whatever they need us to be. And frequently, it's the trusted adult rather than the teacher, or Mr. Aji in Heartstopper. That's a beautiful example of a trusted adult being there when a young person needs them. So I suppose that's how I would describe it.
Oh, you're all so passionate. That's really nice. I love your mountain and the swamp. Oh, that's really nice. Anya, what's your favorite Heartstopper moment?
So I think Liam perhaps mentioned it already, but it's just the one that's stuck in my head from when I watched it, over a year ago now. But I feel like the scene is so clear. It's like I watched it yesterday. They're at some sort of ridiculous birthday party, unlike any kind of birthday party I've ever seen a 16-year-old have. It's Harry's birthday party, and they're sitting upstairs, Charlie and Nick. And they've got their hands on the ground, just next to each other, barely touching, and then the pinky fingers touch, and all those wonderful animations come up again, and it's all like,
Yeah.
yeah, that really stuck with me. I thought it was beautiful.
It's such a special moment. Like, how ballsy of Charlie to actually ask that question, like, to be brave enough to ask Nick those questions. Like, it's just, it's, it, I would have been terrified if it was me, to be honest.
Me too. Me too. I probably still would be right this second, to be honest. Like, that is a brave question to be able to ask someone that you've formed a really good friendship with and go,
Definitely.
Yeah, just
Definitely.
thinking of myself when I'm just thinking of myself when I was 14. I'd have been like, ah, do you like me?
I wish everyone could have seen your face then. Oh.
Devastated at the response I was anticipating.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's a real bittersweet moment, though, for Charlie, because, you know, that's the first time that they kiss. And then Nick gets called away by Harry and he leaves the room without speaking. And Charlie fears the worst. And we see the impact that that has on his mental health. Like, he kind of goes into like a mini spiral. Like, he goes home and he's so sad and he's so upset. And, you know, it's a really bittersweet moment for the couple, you know.
Yeah, but it led to a really beautiful moment with his sister.
No, that was like 5 episodes later. That was like episode
Oh,
eight that that happened. It led
I
to a
just love,
really
I just love Tori so much.
Tori's
He's
great.
so good.
It led to a great moment for Charlie and his dad out in the car. Like, Charlie's dad was so supportive whenever he picked him up. And then, of
Oh,
course, that
yeah.
doorstep moment with Nick the next day when Nick turns up on the doorstep and it's pouring with rain. It's a real like rom-com trope. You know, it's really good.
There you go. I got the wrong family member. I knew there was a family moment. Knew there was a family moment.
Oh,
I'm
that's
just
gonna
being
get
like,
cut.
Tori, sorry. No.
You guys run a lot of youth groups as part of the services that you offer, don't you? Like, all of your organizations seem to have youth groups as one of its components. What are those youth groups like? Like, what happens at the youth groups?
I think more than anything, it depends on the young people in that space. For us, we've got groups that are very different. So one of our groups, they are all, if you give them an activity, great, and you can have whatever conversation you want while that activity is happening. But if you try just to have a conversation, chaos will ensue because the energy in that room is high. And I've got some that are just like, bring me a conversation you want to talk about, and we'll discuss it for the hour and a half we have over a slice of toast and a coffee. Great. And they're completely different, but that's because the young people in that space are completely different. So they've made that group dynamic very different for them. And they change constantly. New young people come, they constantly go back into that. Well, this is a new person. This isn't the same group it was last week. Well, no, it's not, because there's new people, and that's okay. And we go through that process of helping them form all of them relationships and what do they want to do, and tell us what sessions you want. What do you want to look at topics on? Do you want to just make a cake in a mug in a microwave? Like, is that what you want to do? Do you want to paint a stone? Like, do you want to go and do a cool volunteer project where you're like taking on the world? Like, any of them are options. What is it you as a group want to do? It's all about the heart of it. I think that's probably fair to say for everyone, but come on, what are people like in Scotland and Ireland?
Yeah, I think this thing of like you never walk into the same youth group twice is definitely true. I don't know if in your services they're drop-in groups, but that adds an element as well that for our services, young people can drop in even if they haven't necessarily been before. So that yeah, so things really can shift. But as Liam says, that's actually you know there's a lesson there in itself, particularly if you are looking to build more social confidence, really, or you know, yeah, it's just another it's another one of those secret lessons or qu quiet little lessons that happens when you attend a youth group that you know you're kind of already challenging yourself every time to kind of build your confidence and your community, and yeah, definitely. So for youth workers being responsive to those dynamics, it's really crucial. And similarly, it sounds like we've got something. Yeah, I mean, I'm there are going to be just so many parallels in the way that we work, involving young people in what you're doing, what the activities are. So generally, we sort of do that on a 12-week basis with them. But again, also on the understanding that actually, that might be planned. These, you know, the young people might arrive and decide, okay, actually, we're not feeling this today. You know, so again, it's that voluntary thing. There's always that conversation, negotiation between the youth worker and the young people about what's happening. But I think a key thing, and it sort of speaks slightly to the mountain swamp idea, bearing in mind that some people might argue that funders are in the swamp, but I don't know how controversial that view is, but it's about measuring impact, right? Like, how do we demonstrate? Yeah. So, like, precisely, make a cake in a mug, paraglide off a cliff. You know, for a lot of funders, they're going to look at that and go, well, and what? We're paying for these young people to have a jolly.
Yeah.
But actually, we know that through those kinds of, through challenging themselves in that way, there's all sorts of positive outcomes for them. It could be improving their health and well-being through, you know, developing their peer network, making friends, you know, being having the correct pronouns used for the first time.
100%, 100%. That impact stuff that you're talking about and that journey, because lots of people go, I want to see the big thing. What's the big thing? And it's like, but all of these is big because it's big to that young person and that's what matters. And that's us shouting to the world and people being like, yeah, but I can't talk about that. Like, what does this mean? And it's like, here's a funder saying this. I need the amount of people that are coming. And it's not about their individual journey. But I've got one young person that when they started would sit in the corner of the room and not introduce themselves at all. And they've been coming for 6-7 weeks. And just before Christmas, they sang in karaoke in front of the entire group. And I was like, what is this? Like, are you the same person? And it was like, what's going on? But it's all of those little week by week check-ins. How's it going? What's it doing? Here's a random activity. Those small bits of, yeah, it is a safe space. You know, it's a safe space. These are safe people. And that small journey over that time led to them singing on karaoke. If I tell someone that they didn't talk and then they sang on karaoke, that means nothing to most people. But to people that work with young people and see it, that transformation is lots of little bits of us making our way through that swamp and doing lots of random bits and getting really muddy. And then that's what we've got at the end of it. That's what it's about. There's those moments because it's important to that young person.
100%.
See, our working car friend is, we would see queer youth work or LGBTQI plus youth work as a theme of youth work. So an entire like multiverse of madness dimension of youth work, you know, it's a type of it. And in our network, we've got targeted and untargeted work. So sometimes it's drug and alcohol support, but they have to have a thematic group to work on LGBTQI plus identity and group work. So they would become part of that network. And, you know, whenever I'm thinking about outcomes and I'm thinking about this work, I think about that distance traveled perspective. So, you know, for one young person, maybe they have joined you on their journey and the real big thing for them is to get a job, you know, and so you're recruiting them into OCNs and getting them up to the level two so they can get that job, and then they get that job. But for other young people, you know, whenever they're coming down to the youth club, they're walking by 5 or 6 times, like they're not going to go in, like they're not looking for it. They'll walk past it, just like a wee hello, and them buzzing to get in and coming up and sitting down, that can be just as big a step as going on that journey to get that job. And it's recognizing, yeah, that distance rather than the milestone of what they've done, you know, as youth workers, that's the big thing, I think.
100%. And I think you touched on something really important, obviously, for the specific nature, you know, specific youth work that our organisations do and, our youth workers deliver, is, you know, LGBTI, we know that LGBTI young people face disproportionate challenges in, you know, sometimes even just making it through the day, let alone, you know, attainment and, you know, God knows what other pressures that young people face. You know, they also are dealing with homophobia, transphobia, within their own families, you know, very often. Yeah. So,
is that one of the reasons that things like the youth groups that you run are so important? Because sometimes the world that these young people live in is actually quite hostile.
100%. I think it, yeah. And I think all of us will be able to attest that it's about giving them that safe space that they get to be them. It can be that one time they visit a space and they get their name used correctly, their pronouns used correctly. They get to just be who they are, free of judgment, surrounded by people that get it. And like we do evaluations all the time, and young people just write on the bottom of that evaluation how happy they are that their pronouns are respected. Like that's something that other spaces could do if they chose to. And that's part of the other branches of our work. So youth groups are one part of that, and us doing youth work so that those young people are safe and they feel everything they need to feel safe and resilient and be able to go on. But then we do that other work in the background to make other professionals that those people they can feel safe with as well. Like it's we're not in isolation and we know that, and we're not that part of all of our organizations want to do stuff to make those other spaces, the queer young people that attend our groups, access safer as well. Like we can't just be a bubble, and youth work never operates in a bubble. We operate with other professionals, teachers, doctors, social workers, nurses, parents, carers, you name it. We probably come in contact with them as a youth worker working with young people. So it's about going, this is what young people are saying, and using our power as a youth worker that's seen as a professional and respected, and amplifying that voice to people that need to hear it. And I think I can safely say that all of the organizations on here do that, to go, actually, this is what queer young people are saying. Do better.
Yeah. Do you know, I completely subscribe to the whole push for safe spaces in society. You know, whenever I meet any of the young people that come to any of our groups, you know, unfortunately, a lot of and a vast majority of LGBTQI plus people don't have a space where they can be their authentic selves unless they're in their own bedroom. And some don't even have their, well, either their own bedroom or a bedroom to be their safe space. So a lot of youth work is built upon the idea of a first safe space being the home. And then your second safe space, that's what a youth center is. You know, it's an extension of that. But when they arrive in an LGBTQI plus youth provider, it's like it's their first safe space. We notice like whenever they come in the doors, and yes, it might take a little bit of a there's a slow unraveling of like we're just getting used to it and adapting, but then they sort of explode out of their shell. And then they and then they're just wow, like love that, slay, you know. And
so much
then
so.
about a year or so later, they are that true authentic self, you know. They're as I was saying, adolescence is a really intense time, and a lot of stuff is going on in their minds and in their bodies. And so whenever they get that opportunity to feel that belonging, it sort of it explodes out of them. It's a massive happy feeling. And that almost changes how we do our own queer youth work, because we are the first safe space, and that's what we see in a lot of our evaluations as well. They see it as their home. Doesn't matter what the four walls are, it's their family, it's their community, you know.
Yeah,
Totally, I think
you
that's
could
really
literally do it on a park. You could do it in a park, and they would be happy that they've got those people around them, and that's what matters, the connections they make, the memories they're making, and getting to feel happy and safe in themselves.
I've actually got a quote here from a young person that's been accessing our youth groups. Can I share it with you? It's
Oh,
on
please.
the topic of
Yes, of
come
course.
on.
You first, bring it on.
Speaking of evaluation, I have a quote prepared. It's just made it easier for me to attend school and do other things in my life, knowing I'll have the safe spaces at LGBT Scotland that I can get to. So it sort of speaks to to that thing of
Wow.
like the impact is so much further reaching than just 2 hours a week.
It just speaks to how impactful it must be for young people that spending just a short amount of time in your youth groups just makes it so much easier for them to face all those other
Yeah,
obstacles.
100%. And it's about the fact that they can come to that space and know that we'll help them either build and learn the skills to do it themselves when they leave our space and go into another space, and know that they've got that strength within them to to hone it until they get back and can rant or chat or be like, well, this happened, but this is how we dressed it up and this is what we did with it. Or go, I really need your help to talk to this person. We had a young person be like, this is happening in school. I don't know what to do. And we're like, would you like us to be that person that raises it for you? And we can be that person. We can go into those spaces and have a conversation with another professional and go, these are things that you need to fix. And this is why. And the impact that you're having by not doing anything about it is this, without ever saying which young people it is. But that change can happen and make that safe space safer because they've come and told us in that 1 hour, 2 hours, however long we've got with young people. In that, it's the same when, for us, our digital support service, like that Proud Connections live chat is super important for those young people that don't have a group to get to.
Yeah.
Being able to chat to as someone that understands digitally is so important for a lot of young people to go, this is what's going on. I just need to be able to have that conversation with a youth worker that gets it, because that's the only time they're going to get that sort of conversation that is non-judgmental, that is there for them to just say what they need to say and then go from there. Like,
thank you for giving Digital Youth Work a shout out, because yeah, that's really been transformative. You know, not to mention the P word, but pandemic, obviously, but in a place like Scotland, which, you know, has a few rural bits here and there.
Only one or two from what I know. Yeah.
You know, where accessing a youth group is out of the question for loads of young people. The digital youth work service is, yeah, a real lifeline, does phenomenal work.
100%. And it's needed, and it needs it for those young people that will never be able to get to other spaces for a variety of reasons. And actually, it proves really useful for them to be able to chat. And that's just it. That's just it. There's no fancy activity, or it's not dressed up in a bunch of other things, that are really subtle conversations are taking place, and the penny just drops in the distance in the background in a young person's brain. It is just a chat. And sometimes that's all a young person needs, and that's what we can provide. And that's enough. At the end of the day, when you go through all of the stress of it, knowing that you've been able to provide that for a young person is why pretty much any youth worker does it, but even more so when you're doing youth work with queer young people.
Whenever we were in the P word pandemic, I remember I get one of my youth workers coming up to me and saying I want to do an Animal Crossing group with a whole bunch of new young people that I'd never met before, never heard of before, never seen before. And they were from different parts of Northern Ireland that weren't close to groups, and they engaged every single week, every single one of them. They were so in there. I think in a UK-wide perspective, I'm not too sure, but in a Northern Ireland specific perspective, we're quite rural in Northern Ireland. Digital poverty here is such a massive issue, as well as, you know, transport links, you know, so that there can be, we're actually thinking of looking at the Australian system of rurality, because, you know, urban and rural, you know, not all of our young people are in a city or a town, and sometimes there's 2-3 miles between them and their one neighbor, you know, so they add remote on that as well. So it actually was a conversation I'd had with one of your colleagues, Anya, about the utility of that when it comes to a community like ours, which is present. We're present at every single level of society, and there's no geographical basis for it. So yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned the pandemic, because in a way it kind of highlights the importance of groups where people can access that community, because everybody in society has gone through this really long period of quite intense isolation, and that must be magnified to a huge extent for queer young people who already feel very isolated, especially if they're in the closet or maybe don't have that community of queer people around them.
Yeah, massive one. Like, the pandemic had such an impact on everyone, absolutely everyone. And I think that's why Heartstopper was so joyful at the end. It was just joy. It was just happy. It was just a lovely show. And it came at a time that everyone needed something that was just happy. And I think the pandemic presented itself for lots of young people in lots of different ways. We had some young people that couldn't be out, couldn't message anyone, couldn't talk. They very much were as closeted as they could possibly be. And like, so much so that since they've come back, they're still on that sort of re-coming out journey, even though they know they're back in that safe space, they know that they're still they're somewhere that they can be that their authentic selves, that they had to bury that so deep during the pandemic that they're going on that journey again. And then we've got other young people that it sort of had the opposite effect for, and they were very few of them, but it was, I can't not be out anymore. I've spent so much time building my life to the point where I'm coming out. I just need to rip the band-aid off and just deal with it. And they did. And for some, it was, yay, we love you. This is what we want. Very Nick's mum. Yes, I love you. Give me a giant hug. I'm sorry if I ever said anything you like you don't think it. That sort of vibe. And then we had some people that it was very much the opposite of it blew up and they needed to be helped and supported in different ways, whether that's accessing housing or whatnot. And that was a real challenge to support young people in that way during that time where services were all minimized. Not everyone was operational at the same level that they were pre-pandemic, and to the point now where some people aren't, they're still not back to that same strength and so on. So we had such a strange range of experiences for young people during the pandemic and post-pandemic. I imagine that you've had the same.
We had the opposite, where we had, it's a funny way to describe this, as we locked down those LGBTQI plus young people, they locked in and there was no curtain twitching. There was no have a wee poke about and see what's happening outside. They started looking inward. Mm. And what we found in a lot of the queer young people we've worked with is they developed a skill of introspection that you don't see in 12-year-olds. You don't see it very often at the very least. Where they know so much about themselves because they've had no other choice than to look inwards at themselves. And so we found there was this massive coming out, sort of like an explosion about 6 months into the pandemic. And that is still really continuing. The numbers haven't dropped in coming outs because it's not just coming out once, it's coming out again. No, it wasn't a fever dream or pandemic dream. It was, I was telling you how I was feeling, how I was thinking, and then you've got maybe 2 years of arrested development in young people where a 15-year-old has not had some of those key experiences we recognize with young people when they're 13 and 14. They're sort of, as much as maybe educationally, they haven't, as a majority, maybe a majority haven't benefited as much from the pandemic as some young people really thrived in the digital space. A lot of young people really didn't. And educationally, they are sort of getting over a couple of obstacles. I think the same is very true socially, personally, emotionally. And I suppose we've got a fair bit of catching up to do with them.
And I think, the impact on all other services, right? That still haven't returned to quote unquote normal. So, for example, youth sexual health services, certainly where I work in the West, just haven't returned to anywhere near what they were before the pandemic. Young people haven't had a chance to build relationships with, clinicians or they've completely stopped, but well, they're starting to reopen kind of drop-in clinics, but it's just all of these, so many of our partners in the community that we rely on to be able to support young people well have also been impacted massively. And I think the repercussions are going to be felt for some time. Sorry to kind of be a bit of a downer.
I think it's just being honest. And actually, that's what our young people value about youth work so much, is that we are honest with them. Mm. We're like, yeah, this sucks. This is where you need to be, really. We know that this is the right service to support you. They've got this going on. So it might be a little bit of a wait, but at least you're on that list. At least you're doing it. At least we've taken a step. Yeah. And that's okay. Yeah. And we're going to be here while that journey's going on, no matter what, that's fine. But we've taken that first step, and that's a massive deal. Well done. Congratulations. And that honesty goes a long way. We ask a lot of young people when they come to spaces and work with young youth workers, and we should have that open honesty and transparency with them because they deserve it.
Yeah, I think that confusion that people have about LGBT youth work in particular, not just as a youth worker, but also as an LGBT youth worker, because we are supporting our young people through, in some cases, really challenging medical issues where, you know, they're trying to access hormones or represent themselves to their GP, or maybe we're talking to social services who've made a pretty bad decision or a couple of bad decisions frequently, a lot of them. You know, we're seeing in that we're offering a level of support that it's a minimum. We're doing the bare minimum, and we're seen as the super specialists of every single current profession out there.
Yes, it's actually a bit of a scandal, to be frank. It's a scandal.
Yeah. Jack of all trades is a phrase thrown around with youth workers quite a lot. And you kind of have to be a little bit, but it's not our job to be all of those professions.
And it's a worry that they get reliant on maybe one level of support where you're making that representation, but they really maybe need a social worker who understands them and can be culturally competent.
Yeah.
And it's those yeah. conversations, and I think it lends in itself into things around mentoring or one-to-one support, and we offer both, and mentoring's all around the young person and where they want to go and what journey they're going on. And for us, one-to-one support's more around a little bit of that advocacy, when it's a little bit more, there's other people involved that need to hear that and need to hear that they need to be doing better and hear what the young people are saying. We can help them spread that, get that message into those spaces and into those conversations really meaningfully and make sure that they are being heard.
Definitely.
While supporting that young person with the stuff that the young person needs supporting with.
That's
for them to work on.
That's totally true. But I think, I don't know what waiting lists for like gender identity clinics are like down there. Here it's something like, it's nearly hitting 4 years. And I think that reality is just totally unacceptable. Like the fact that our small to medium sized charities are having to step in where, you know, healthcare professionals have a responsibility. So I'm going to get off this soapbox in a minute. We keep being told people don't really know what we do, that we need to be proving our worth, that we need to be demonstrating our impact. And yet time and time and time again, it's our services, it's our youth workers that are supporting young people through extremely critical, complex, bureaucratic processes that totally disregard their identity. Where it's strange
for such pressure to be put on youth work without people actually going, I truly understand what it is. And part of that is on us as youth workers to get better at going, that's your job. That's your job. And that's us having to look at ourselves, because actually we're youth workers because we care. And that's a part of the challenge and the fine balance that youth work always has to strike is actually we do it because we care. But we also need to use what we know as youth workers and the access to young people and what they're saying to us to really shout at the organisations that aren't doing what they're supposed to, whether that's local authority, healthcare, police, whatever. There's loads of them that need improvement, and we could probably rattle off a list and have a whole separate episode on where can we make improvements. But it's actually, we just need to go, this is us, and this is what we're going to do, and this is what we're going to focus on. We need you to do these bits because they're your specialism.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I think that's the specialism bit, right? Because our work is to support young people to set their own goals and achieve them. But if they're living in a society that blocks them every single step of the way, it's brutal, really. Or it can be.
It can, really absolutely. Tough. But and the other side of that is that actually get some young people that do that will go on and champion it. Mm. Like I'm a product of youth work. I had really amazing youth workers. I was very fortunate. But because of those youth workers, I felt comfortable enough to access an LGBT youth group. I was not accessing that. That was not for me. I was very much, I'm not having this conversation with anyone. We're going to ignore this. And then that representation that they showed me and said, these things are fine. This is what's going on. Talking about Pride and what it meant and why things like Manchester Pride were important and how did they start, led me to access a group And then we started that own event as a group of young people on a local level. We were like, I want to do this and I want to shout about this because people need to hear it, and they need to hear it from us because it's pointless hearing it from you. Yeah. And actually we have that power to really empower young people and get them motivated to help make those changes. Because the more of us that are doing it, the more of us that are saying it, and that's why our allies are so important, is actually we all need to be saying this message really clearly and really loudly for people to hear. And it's us to sort of piece together all of those bits of networks we're connected to go, here's
for sure. Liam, what's your favorite Heartstopper moment?
Oh, I knew this question was coming. And my favorite Heartstopper moment, snowball fight, super cute, followed
Ooh,
by
yes.
hand zappy moment, totally relate. And then has to be Elle skipping back into school with Tyrone Darcy.
Yeah.
Those two. I can't have one. The show's full of them. But they're my
I
two.
Know. I love all of those moments. It's really interesting to watch kind of Nick and Charlie form that first friendship, like whenever they first meet in episode one, and how they go on that friendship journey first. And then you almost get to watch them fall in love. It's like super sweet and super awesome. But I have to say, like that moment where Elle returns to school on sports day, it's just so empowering. Like, I always get choked up whenever I talk about it. Like, I just think it's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. It's such a beautiful, beautiful moment and a testimony to the friendships that young people make when they get to be their authentic self.
For sure. You touched on it a second ago about, you started to talk about other kind of youth work that you do. Like, you mentioned that you do some one-to-one support. How's that different from like the group, how's that different from the youth groups that you run?
So youth groups are all about socializing and big bits of a group coming together, and there's a number of them, and they range in size, and that's great. But one-to-one support is about putting that one young person with a worker, and it's that chat about what you need, but just you. This is a really focused conversation. It's about you. You're at the center of it. What do we need to do? What journey are we going to go on? And sort of that's where it is. And then it's, who else is involved? Who else do we need to talk to? Who else do we need to help take on this journey? It's that sort of one-to-one stuff. And mentoring is very much the young people at the heart of it. What journey do they want to go on? What does their mountain look like, to go back to the earlier analogy? But just with one young person, whereas a youth group's all about taking loads of young people on a journey all at once, and they'll all get something different out of that space, and that's okay. But it's this is the rough thing for everyone. And then they'll all get a little bit, whereas one-to-one support is all about putting like one young person at the center of the conversation and the planning around it.
And CareFriend and LGBT of Scotland both offer that kind of support to young people too.
Yeah, so one-to-one support, you know, definitely from our perspective, really is the starting point for going into a youth group. You know, we meet all of our young people
okay.
one-on-one before they even encounter the swathe of young people that inevitably come through the doors. What that really looks like for us is they get in contact, we arrange to meet them maybe just before the group starts. Then our volunteers or our peer leaders, all of our youth groups and all of our centres are all peer led. So the young people actually are trained up to that level 3 or level 4 equivalent. So they can lead the service and we're just there as sort of like the avatar of what they want. But then they meet those young volunteers who have been in that exact position of meeting with that staff youth worker. So they empathize at that level. And then they integrate them in, get to know them a little bit. And as the young people come in, who maybe 3 months ago, 2 years ago, have been in that exact position, will slowly start trickling towards them to say, hiya, how are you doing? What's the crack? What's happening? And that community sort of engagement, you know, they look at this new person. They're like, oh my God, it's a new person. Hiya. But then they'll slowly come forward because it's like there's that shared community responsibility for new people, you know?
Definitely.
We would see sort of mentoring sort of folded in to one-to-one support. You know, it's a very structured program of building up somebody's levels of autonomy and an ability to do things for themselves because they can motivate themselves, but they maybe need a little bit of support to get there, you know? Well, some people it's a 10-minute chat, and for some people it's 3-hour-long meeting conversations. We've actually gotten a lot more focused with it to make sure it's surrounding sexual orientation and gender identity, because we made a big division a small while ago to see whether something is interagency support required. That falls a little bit more into mentoring, and it's agreeing with, say, social services, comms, other services that are involved with that young person. So we're having a lot of perspectives there. But that's more professional referrals, because they see, oh, LGBT group, they are LGBT, but they're going through a very specialized trauma disorder. I'm going to refer them to that LGBT group and hope for the best, you know.
Totally. That it sounds very similarly to sort of how our one-to-one support is structured as well. But aside from the peer mentoring, that was really interesting to hear about. But yeah, we do get a lot of, referrals for young people that are experiencing very significant trauma, underlying, mental health issues or whatever. And we've worked hard as an organisation to identify actually how we're best placed to support young people in a one-to-one context. And we've hit upon essentially an asset-based coaching approach that's essentially working with young people around where they're at with their sexual orientation and gender identity, and working with them to signpost them and get them into, the more appropriate support, that require professional help. I guess one thing we haven't touched on is how often homophobia and transphobia is internalized, right? And actually, through being able to sort of even just kind of articulate some things for the first time in a one-to-one with a youth worker can really be, a massive milestone for young people in terms of being comfortable and confident with who they are. So, yeah, it's a really necessary complement to the youth groups. It works really well.
I think that just, highlights the need to work interagency, especially with counselors. I remember reading a couple of reports coming out about increased prevalence of trauma disorders after something like a pandemic. But definitely, I think it was the latter part of 2021 when they were predicting another, was it the NHS was predicting around 230,000 extra cases of PTSD in England alone due to COVID. And we're already a lonely community with a lot of anxiety, a lot of poor health outcomes, especially when it comes to mental health. And yeah, I think as one-to-one workers, we would need to be very cautious about where it spills over. And that's where that interagency work just is so important.
And being really clear with young people from the off of like what as youth workers we're able to support them with, and again it comes back to that partners in the learning process thing, starting of and the openness and honesty that you were talking about earlier, Liam, of this is how we can support you, but we can't do XYZ. We're not a sort of silver bullet.
Absolutely.
And yeah, just being clear about that is really important.
We've talked a lot about youth workers tonight, but who are they? Like, who are these youth workers that we talk about?
An array of wonderful, wonderful human beings from a diverse set of backgrounds, whether that's people that are from the community or not. Youth workers come from every walk of life and enter it in very different ways. Like, I'm fortunate enough to have been able to go and get qualified as a recognised qualification for youth work, but not all youth workers have that qualification, and that's okay. And I think that's really important to acknowledge that actually you don't have to have that to be a youth worker. It's about caring for young people. It's about putting them at the centre of what you're doing and understanding why you're doing it. So there's loads of ways to be a youth worker and into youth work.
I think youth work chose me, and then it took me a while for me to choose it, as the way forward for my career. But I think, I think anybody can be a youth worker, but it takes a while to become a youth worker that can hold to some of those core tenets that Anya was talking about in a way that's authentic and the way that's able to be the full breadth of what a youth worker actually does. Youth work can be that very first ring of peer mentor and peer leadership, all the way up to director of youth work in an organization or a statutory organization or statutory aligned. But yeah, qualifications and experience, the we have this body called JNC, which works to validate qualifications in youth work as professional youth work degrees.
In Scotland, the situation is a little bit different. So youth work sits within a profession known as CLD, which is Community Learning and Development. And that's all about working with individuals and communities to identify their goals and take action to bring about positive change. So, basically the youth work journey, but it just sits alongside kind of community education and stuff as well. I think it's absolutely important to say, as Liam and Lee have already, that you don't need to take that route in order to be a good youth worker.
Exactly.
What are some of the personal characteristics or the qualities that really make a youth worker a great youth worker?
A cheeky youth worker. Sorry, my perspective. Just somebody who's a lot of cheek. I like that.
Yeah, I think that is it. Like, are young people like that? I bounce around the room, I've got loads of energy, and I'm not afraid to be a bit of a goofball with them. Like, that's what they want. They want that energy. They want people that are just authentic. Like, they want them to be who they are and let the young person be who they are. So being authentic, being honest, being willing to be a bit of a goofball, tends to help as well.
Yeah, not taking yourself too seriously is really important. But yeah, I think authenticity, absolutely, but also coupled with like a real self-awareness of your role as a youth worker in that learning process with that young person, and knowing when to maybe pull back if, or give a little more, maybe you need to challenge yourself a bit, because I don't naturally bounce around a room. So, I often find I have to really kind of encourage myself. But that's me pushing my boundaries and learning and being a partner in that process with the young people. So
100%. I'm the
enjoy doing
opposite.
youth work, really.
Getting me to stop talking is the exact opposite, and I have to be mindful that silence is a really useful tool. Like, silence is okay, Liam. You don't have to talk, and that's it. And that's why youth workers come from every walk of life, and it's so different. And it's about finding what you like and using it and utilizing it, and that passion and that joy. I think the most fundamental part of it is that you're there for young people and you care about making the world better for young people in some way, one day at a time.
Oh, that's so sweet.
My youth work style is so similar to you, Liam. It's LGBTQIADHD. It's just like Lee, settle down. They're telling me to calm down.
Absolutely.
Lee, what's your favorite Heartstopper moment?
My favorite heartstopper moment is the moment when Charlie quits rugby, and the coach, her immediate reaction was to go on the, who said anything to you? Like, I thanked them, like, have they said anything? And it's sort of like compared with Mr. Raji. And maybe that is my immediate reaction, is like, I'm going to fight the world. And then it's probably should be they'll tell me when they want to tell me. It really hit me as a youth worker, especially after Charlie defended himself against Ben and coming into his power in that way in that episode. I was just really, really proud of him, and seeing all those different people involved in his life and support him through that journey. I just like it was like, but then Tori's older sister, Magic, is just, yeah.
Oh, it's incredible. I love Cooch Singh. Cooch Singh is a really great Heartstopper character. I think she's a bit underrated sometimes. She has a much, we see more of her in the later books, as you newly read the books. So we see more of her in books 3 and 4. And yeah, I really like her. And I get what you mean about that moment where her approach is a bit different to Mr. Ajay, who is very almost coaching led, where he always puts it back onto Charlie. And, you know, whereas Cooch Singh was like, let's fix this. Why do you think organizations like the organizations that you work for are so important in today's society?
No, I think, to be honest, Jamie, the reason that the organizations that we work for are so important in today's society is because we do multiple things to support the community. So we support LGBT young people as the young people they are, but we support the adults in their lives, whether that's in a professional or a sort of they are their young person sort of way. And actually being able to do work on multiple levels and support, whether that's training, conversations, youth groups, one-to-one mentoring, providing that space for people to be able to come and learn and better themselves helps make the world better. We want to create a world where actually LGBT young people can just be themselves and they don't need to be in fear or anything like that. And all of the branches of the work we do help shape that one little bit at a time. So wading through the swamp to get us up that mountain.
There's a quote, and I can't actually remember who it was from. Progress is not linear, it's not a straight line. And I think being a wee baby millennial, I think whenever I was growing up, it was sort of maybe parroted to me through the media that things are always going to get better. But now, as an adult, and as I've grown, and as I've seen rising sentiments from certain extreme groups that are seem hell-bent on reducing bodily autonomy rights, whether that be for trans folk or for people born with a vagina. I think, I'm really seeing that, it's not always going to get better in the obvious way of we're slowly but surely, steadily, without any hard work going in, going to get our rights, going to get our values and be recognized as human beings with respect and dignity. I think queer youth organizations definitely help nurture these young people to sort of not see struggle as a bad thing, but see their struggle as the sort of calm before the storm in a very positive way, that it's going to be the before of their brilliant future. It's something to work through at the time, and they will be a far stronger human being and ready to fight for their own rights. Not because we're teaching them anything about their rights in that way, but that we're fleshing out them as human beings to get ready for that journey.
Yeah, I mean, I totally like, I really echo that sentiment. I think the human rights of LGBTI people in the UK are increasingly under threat. And the voices of LGBTI young people need to be heard if we're going to build a better world.
Oh, that's so nice. What are you looking forward to the most in season 2 of Heartstopper?
I want more. And they've talked about it in lots of places, more diversity in who they represent and who they show. So more young people can connect to it, whether that's queer young people or people with a disability or people of colour, whatever it may be. The show has been beautifully diverse so far, and I imagine that will continue. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. But as specific moments, I want Elle to have more trans friends, would be what I'm looking forward to. I'm watching Elle blossom.
I can't wait to find out how she meets her new friends because she hasn't had them so far. So, and we know that she has two new trans friends in season 2, don't we? That was the two characters that they cast. So I'm really curious where she encounters them. How does she meet them?
Yeah, that's me. That's the bit I'm very intrigued by. Elle sort of embracing that trans element that was really, really horrible to her for some parts of the pre-story, because we don't see it, which I like. So that's what
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to.
for sure, for sure.
One of my favorite characters in this whole series is Charlie. And he's such a complex creature. And there's so much that goes on in his head. And the Heartstopper books, you know, they're a really massive medium, a soapbox, to speak about some of the issues affecting a lot of young gay men in particular. I think just based on really flawed knowledge, I think I sort of know what's going to happen in season two, and I'm not looking forward to it in a way, but if the writing is anywhere as good as season one, I'm going to be absolutely glued to the screen to see how this kid, who I firmly believe throughout this whole first season has still been a closed up little clam, how he slowly starts to open up.
It is interesting, like his story, the story arc that he's going to go on in seasons two and three, it does get a bit dark, and I can't wait actually to see how they handle all of that kind of all of the mental health experiences that he has. Yeah, without spoiling it for people who haven't read ahead, it'll be interesting. Anya, do you have anything that you're looking forward to in season two?
More banter around milkshakes.
Oh
Banter and
yes.
milkshakes. Strong pitch. I like it.
Folks, thanks so much for coming on and being guests in this episode. I've learned so much about youth work. I had no idea that it was so involved, like that it was such a big thing. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on and being guests and spending this time with us. I hope you enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Very much.
Anytime.
Class.
Anytime.
Thank you for bringing us together. It's just been so wonderful to hear about what everyone's up to, and yeah.
But no, it has been so great to just sit and chat with you guys. Listeners, I hope you got something out of it. I know that we didn't talk too much about Heartstopper this time, but I think that the conversation was really interesting. Like I thought it was fascinating. Thanks so much for staying on and listening. If you've made it this far, we really appreciate it. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. It makes such a huge difference to the show. And you can also write us a 5-star review. And guests, you can go online and write 5-star reviews too. Don't think that that's beyond the realms of possibilities. It's not like a huge ego thing. Give yourself a 5-star rating. You deserve it. Yeah, so we'll see you in 2 weeks' time when our new episode drops. We have to say goodbye to everybody.
Bye.
Bye, folks.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Today's show was produced by Shut Up and Listen in partnership with Parafriend and I, LGBT Youth Scotland, and the Proud Trust. You can follow us on social media at Proper Full On Gay Podcast and learn more about the show and our partners at properfullongaypodcast.com.